ृङ्गीतान्दितं्योगत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम बैक टू अवर भक्तिशास्त्री भगवद्गीता कोर्स। वी आर नाउ डिस्कसिंग द फोर्थ चैप्टर। वी विल नाउ डिस्कस अबाउट यज्ञायाचरतः। इन 4.23 वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट कृष्णा टेलिंग अर्जुन टू एक्ट इन द मूड ऑफ यज्ञ। So now, generally people think of yajna as fire sacrifice. So we discussed in 3.9 that yajna is not just a activity, it is also a principle. The principle is of sacrifice. The one specific form of sacrifice may be through fire, through the Agnidev, who is manifesting as the fire, who accepts the offerings that we make. But the essential point is sacrifice. And actually even the word sacrifice is related in English etymology to sacralize, to sacred. So when we sacrifice something, it is the idea that we are doing something sacred, we are making it sacred. So originally the idea of the word sacrifice was related with the word sacred. So Krishna will first give us a very broad vision of what sacrifice means. And then he will give specific ways in which Arjuna can perform sacrifices. So let's look at the verse. 4.24
ब्रह्मार्पणं ब्रह्महवे ब्रह्माग्नौ ब्रह्मणाहुतं ब्रह्मैव तेन गन्तव्यं ब्रह्मकर्म समाधिना।
सो द वर्ड ब्रह्म कम्स सो मेनी टाइम्स ओवर हियर दैट इट माइट लीड टू सम कन्फ्यूजन। नाउ द वर्ड ब्रह्म इफ यू सी इट कम्स 6 टाइम्स, 2 टाइम्स इन ए एंड बी ऑफ 4.24 एंड वंस इन सी एंड डी। So what is Krishna telling over here? Actually, if you look at the other portion, Agnau, Haver, Hutam, Arpanam. So all these are referring to the components of a sacrifice. So Arpanam is that which is offered, the of contribution. Brahma Arpanam. So Arpit Karna, to contribute, to give. Brahma Arpanam. So what is being contributed is Brahman. Brahma Haver. So Havi is butter. So butter is like the fuel in a sense that is used to make sure that sacrifice grows. So butter itself can also be called a sacrifice, but along with that, there are grains and other things which are sacrifices. Butter is like the main thing that is added to the fire. So in that sense, it's separate over here. Brahma Havir. And then Brahma Agnau, the fire itself, Agnau. That is also Brahma. That is also spirit. So now Brahma here doesn't necessarily refer to Brahma Jyoti. Brahma is a generic word used to refer to spiritual. That is also spiritual. Brahmana Hutam. So, Hutam is the offered. So, the person doing the offering, Brahma. So, Brahmarpanam, Brahmavir, Brahmagno, Brahmana Hutam. So, the person doing the offering is also spiritual. And then, Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam. Gantavya is destination. So, the destination that is attained is also Brahma. And that person, what is the person doing? Krishna was talking in the previous verses about how one should do karma. So he's saying this person is doing Brahma karma. That person is doing spiritual work. And the person is in samadhi, na, is absorbed in samadhi. So what is this verse telling? That when one acts in the spirit of yajna, then all of existence becomes like a sacrifice. Once one understands that ultimately it is Krishna's energy that is present everywhere, and that Krishna's energy is all-encompassing. Krishna's energy is there for everyone to use for whatever purposes they want. But it is ultimately Krishna's energy. They can use it for Krishna's service. They can use it for sense gratification. Whatever they use it for, it is ultimately Krishna's energy. So once we understand this, then and we decide to use it for Krishna's service, we decide to use it for spiritual purposes in general, then everything can become spiritually understood. So let's look at a specific example to understand what we mean by spiritually understood. So we have discussed this earlier briefly. Things that are material and spiritual, we can talk about them in two ways. In a compositional sense and in an applicational sense. Compositional means what is material and what is spiritual? It depends on what it is made of. So if something is made up of Satchitananda, that is spiritual. Something is made of Jada Tattva, like earth, water, fire, air, ether, then that is material. That is from the composition point of what it is made up of. But there is also an applicational sense. What is it used for? So prasad may be made of material elements, but because it is used for Krishna's service, so it is spiritual. So spiritual means it is used for spiritual purposes. So things can be spiritualized by being used for spiritual purposes. So that is the applicational sense of the word spiritual. So when they say the spiritual master's body is spiritual, what does it mean? That means it's used for spiritual purposes. The spiritual master's body may also grow old, it may also get diseases. But that doesn't make it materialistic in the way the ordinary people's body is materialistic. Because the spiritual master's body is being used for Krishna's service. So because it is being used for Krishna's service, so it leads to spiritual, it is spiritualized for all practical purposes. Prabhupada says there can be a golden box and there's a gold-plated box. So that is Satchitananda is like the golden box. So that is spiritualized, like gold-plated. But essentially, both are actually gold. So like that, the spiritual master's body or other things like that, which can be spiritualized by the practice of by the practice of Krishna consciousness, of engagement in devotional service. So now let's look at what the verse means. So Krishna is, as Chakravarti Pada Acharya explained over here, that re-envision the battlefield as yajna. So here, Arjuna is telling Krishna, okay, if you want to perform yajna, so Arjuna may get a question here, that Krishna, if you want me to perform yajna, yajnaya acharataha karma, then why am I here on battlefield? This is not a yajna. Let me go to the forest and there we will do yajna nicely. You know, we'll call some priests and we'll all do yajna properly. I'll do yajna. I'll become a yajman for doing yajna. I says, no, Krishna is. Acharya is saying that Krishna is implying this itself is a yajna. So what is the yajna over here? The battlefield is your yajna sthali. And the yajna sthali is the place where yajna is performed. Then you have to perform, you have to have a ladle or a spoon for making the offerings. So we take things in a spoon and offer it. So that ladle or spoon is your Gandiva bow. And Ahuti, what is the Ahuti that is to be offered? We offer ghee or some other item. So this Ahuti that is offered is the Kauravas. And who is going to accept the offering? What is the sacrificial fire? That is the Virat Rupa. So we'll discuss in the 11th chapter how the offering that is being made, or the Virat Rupa will be devouring everything. So the warriors, so Dhamishtra Karalani Chate Mukhani. Dhamishtra Karalani Chate Mukhani. Your mouth is filled with fearsome teeth. And Churnita Iruttamangai. They are entering in and they are getting shattered. All the warriors. Dhartarashtran. So all the sons of Dhritarashtra. So the point is, the Univaratrupa, when it is devouring, it is actually showing how the offering that is being made is being accepted. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, yajna is not just one specific religious activity. It is the principle. So if you are acting in the principle of sacrifice and for the pleasure of the absolute truth, then even your battlefield can be a yajna. So this verse basically says, whatever we are doing, that can become a yajna. So right now, we are discussing Krishna Katha. So, Brahma Arpanam Brahmavid Brahmagna Brahmanahutam. So actually the sound vibration, all of us are doing sacrifice. What is sacrifice that we are doing? We are offering our consciousness. So Krishna is manifesting as a sound and we are offering our consciousness to Krishna by speaking and hearing. And as we do like this, we speak and hear and offer our consciousness to Krishna. Brahma Arpanam Brahmavir. So everything becomes spiritualized over there. And when we become spiritualized, then Brahmaiva Tena Gantam. When we make spiritual advancement, ultimately we attain Brahman. We attain the spiritual platform by hearing sound vibration regularly. Brahma Karma Samadhina. So, because we were actually doing Brahma Karma, we are doing spiritual activity. So, here Krishna is telling that let us fix our mind on the spiritual element that underlies everything. And by spiritualizing our consciousness, we can actually re-envision everything. Re-envision is not just a sentimental fantasy or intellectual conceptualization. It is actually insight into the true nature of things. That's what we will get by such thinking, by the vision that Gita is providing us. Srila Prabhupada's purport is quite significant. Let us look at some points in it. So, Prabhupada said that Prabhupada explained the word of Brahma and how everything is ultimately Brahma. The Lord is spiritual and the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahma Jyoti, spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahma Jyoti. But when the Jyoti is covered by illusion, Maya or sense gratification, it is called material. This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. So now it's a significant thing. When the Jyoti is covered by illusion or sense gratification, it is called material. What does that mean? Ultimately, Prabhupada is talking here from the application point of view. Everything coming from Krishna, we can say in one sense is spiritual because it's coming from Krishna. But when it's covered by illusion, we think that it is meant for not Krishna's service. We think it is meant for sense gratification. And when we think that it is meant for sense gratification, then we become entangled. So if we want to avoid such entanglement, then we have to develop the right vision. So Prabhupada is saying that everything becomes spiritualized when one has the right consciousness. So now Krishna will describe different kinds of yajnas. So let's look at what these kinds of yajnas are. So here there is literal sacrifice, which is Nishkam Karma Yoga. Then there is worship of devatas, Sakam Karma Yoga. This is 4.25 A and B. Then offering Atma to Brahman, that is Jnana Yoga, that is 4.25 CD. So we'll come back to the list as we move forward. Let's look at the elements one by one. Literal sacrifice means, or Nishkam Karma Yoga means, actually, the Nishkam Karma Yogis, when they are living in the world, they also perform sacrifice, they also do yajnas. So let us look at this 4.25 now. Daivam eva pare yajnam yogina paryupasate brahmagnava pare yajnam yajnena ivopajumate. So daivam eva apare yajnam. So daivam is unto the devatas, apare is some people. Yajnam. Some people, they perform the yajna, yoginah paripasati. And even those are yogis, those are worshipping the devatas, they are also at one level connected with Krishna. They may not be connected with Krishna at a very high level, they may not connect with absolute truth at a high level, but they are acknowledging there is some higher reality. So they are connected. Yoginah paripasati. And in Brahmagna, apare yajnam. So apare yajnam means there are others who perform a yajna of Brahma yajnenaiva upajuhuvati. Upajuhuvati. So what do they offer? They offer, in one sense, themselves. They offer the soul into the Brahman. So what does this mean, offering themselves into upajuhuvati? That means they conceptualize that the Brahman is the absolute truth and I have to merge into it. That is also kind of sacrifice. They want to offer themselves. So the point is, there are different kinds of sacrifices. So here Krishna is giving a vision of how various religious activities which people may perform within the broad Vedic culture, they are all various forms of yajna. Now, of course, after describing these various forms of yajna, Krishna will describe their purpose and then he will recommend to Arjuna what you should do. But the point is, Krishna is describing here different kinds of yajnas. So, Prabhupada talks about here Bahu Ishwarvadis, those who are interested in material benefits, worship the demigods by various sacrifices according to Vedic rituals. They are called Bahava Ishwarvadis, or believers in many gods. So how can somebody be a Bahu Ishwarvadi? A polytheism is the idea that there are many gods. Theism is belief in God. Monotheism is belief in one God. Polytheism is belief in many gods. Pantheism is the belief that everything is God. So henotheism is the belief that there is one absolute truth which manifests in many forms. So actually, there are many versions of this. So here, the Bahu Ishwarvadi are the polytheists. So polytheism always faces an unsolvable logical problem. How can someone believe in there being many supremes? If we say God, the word God generally connotes supreme. How can there be one supreme? So then the possibility is that, okay, there are multiple possibilities. There are different departments and there are different gods are in charge of the different departments. And is there one supreme beyond that? That's the Vedic understanding. There are like departments and they are the cabinet ministers in the universal government. And above that there is a supreme god. So this is the correct understanding. There are many gods, but they are all assistants of the one supreme god. So is the Vedic philosophy polytheistic or monotheistic? It is actually monotheistic, but it is multi-level monotheism. That there are many gods in the Christian tradition, in the Islamic tradition, in the Abrahamic tradition generally. They are the true god and false gods. That means they have the idea that false god means these are gods which don't exist only. They have been created by the imagination of people. So that's why they have the idea that, okay, wherever they will conquer some territory, if you look at the history of these religions, they will destroy the forms of worship over there. And they say that the false god has to be rejected so that the true god can be established. Vedic understanding is not that way. They don't consider false gods, they are subordinate gods. And there is one supreme god. And the subordinate gods are assistants of the supreme god. So it's multi-level monotheism. Now, here Krishna is talking about how different people perform different yajnas. Now, after describing this Bahuishwarvadi and Brahmavadi, Krishna moves forward and describes another kind of yajna. Shrotra din indriyananye sayamagnishu juhuvati shabdadin vishayananya indriyagnushu juhuvati. So, shrotra din indriyani anya. Anya is some other people. Previously, the word was used apare. Here it is anya. It means the same thing more or less. So, there are other people who, what is the yajna they do? Juhvati. They offer what? Juhvati means offer. So, they offer the hearing process in sayama. That means what they do is, they use their ears and turn them inwards and offer them to the mind. So, they offer the hearing process in the fire of mental control, of self-restraint. That means that actually the essential principle of sacrifice is that what could be used for our pleasure, we use it for offering to Krishna for his pleasure. And then we use whatever comes, whatever remains from it for our pleasure. If that we will get pleasure, highest pleasure that comes by connecting with Krishna. So the ears, we can use it to hear so many things. We can hear movie music, we can hear different kinds of sound vibrations. And they may give us some pleasure. But what we do is, we turn the ears inwards and offer them in the fire of mental restraint. That means we don't hear about mundane subjects. So we turn and when we offer the ears in the fire of mental control means, we use the mind to control what all we will hear. We don't expose ourselves to material sound vibrations. We focus on hearing spiritual sound vibrations. So this Prabhupada explains is what the Brahmacharis do, the unadulterated Brahmacharis, Prabhupada says. What do? They turn their senses inward. The eyes can look at beautiful things, but they turn the eyes and they turn them inwards. That means, they don't. Whatever might give the eyes pleasure, they don't indulge in those activities. They use that eyes for spiritual purposes. So this is one level of yajna. We take the senses and offer them into the mind. And then, Krishna says, the other part is, shabda, deen, vishayan, anye, other people. What do they do is, vishaya, vishaya is sense object, shabda, and I use the example of shabda, shabda is sound vibration. So, that is correlated with what was earlier talked about, shotra, shotra is ears. So, indriyagneshu juhuvate, and they offer it into the senses. What does this mean? This means that, actually, when a person is a regulated householder, at that time, there is contact with the senses and sense objects. But that contact is not unrestrained. That contact is not irreligious. That contact is also based on the principle of sacrifice. So, when the senses are offered into sense objects, sense objects are offered into the senses. Then, when that is done within the precincts of dharma, then that is actually not irreligious. We'll see in the 7th chapter, Krishna will tell, dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. When there is sex life that is not contrary to religious principles, then that is actually Krishna manifesting himself. So, these the regulated householders perform yajna by offering the senses, sense objects to senses in a regulated way. That means that there is sacrifice involved there also. What is the sacrifice? The sacrifice is regulation. Whatever could be done in an unregulated way, when it is done in a regulated way, that is sacrifice, and by that people become purified. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that there are four varnas, and so he says Brahmachari hears only words concerning Krishna consciousness. Hearing is the basic principle for understanding, and therefore the pure Brahmachari engages fully in Hare Nama Anukirtan, chanting and hearing the glory of the Lord, and he restrains himself from the vibrations of material sounds. And here Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavatam. This is a paraphrase of our sex life, intoxicant, meat eating are general tendencies of human society. But a regulated householder does not engage in restricted sex life and other sense gratification. This way, this is also a kind of yajna. Now Krishna will describe another kind of yajna here. So sarvani indriya karmani prana karmani chapare atma sanyam yogagno juvati jnana deepite. So here now Krishna is describing another kind of yajna. So what is it? What is seen? We have seen worship of devatas, then we have sakam karma kanda, karma yoga, then we have jnana yoga, naishtik brahmachari, then we have grahastha brahmacharis. Why the word grahastha brahmachari? Because they are regulated. They are also living in Brahman because of the regulation that they are practicing. Now Krishna will talk about jnana yoga. Then he will talk about other kinds of yoga. Let's look at jnana yoga now. What is this? Sarvan indriya karmani. So the karma of all the indriyas, all the senses, that what is done, that is offered. And also what is offered? Prana karmani. The activities of prana, pranavayu. So this is referring to, in pranayam, what happens? The breathing is regulated. Breathing becomes disciplined. And the idea is to turn the breathing also inwards, to use the breathing, to use regulation of the breathing as a means to turn the consciousness inwards. And then in yoga, there is a stage in the process of Ashtanga yoga. There is also a stage called Pratyahar, where one cuts off all the senses. So now, in many ways, when a jnana yogis practice, what is their sadhana? They may also use the sadhana of Ashtanga yoga, because their focus primarily is on turning their consciousness inwards. So some jnana yogis may use the sadhana of bhakti yoga also. They may think that the personal Brahman is a temporary manifesting of the absolute truth. And based on that, they may try to turn inwards. Or others may try to turn inwards using the process of Ashtanga yoga. Some others may try to do it by just mere speculation. Na iti, na iti, na iti. So whichever way they do it, the point is that they turn away from the outward world towards the inner world. Atma Sanyama Yoga. So they are self-control. Atma Sanyam. So Prabhupada translates that control of the mind. They are trying to turn inwards and into the fire of the control mind. Juhvati. And who are these? Jnana Deepite. So Jnana Deepite is a beautiful word. Prabhupada translates it as because of the urge for self-realization. So Jnana Deepa. Deepa is light. Jnana is knowledge. So Jnana Deepite means because they are illuminated by knowledge, they understand my real life is not outwards, it is inwards. So let me turn my whole consciousness inwards. And Prabhupada talks about some technical words over here. So he says there are two kinds of souls. There is a Pratyagatma and Paragatma. So Parag, Raga is attachment. Pararag is when the attachment is directed outwards. So the soul is attached to things. That is Paragatma. The soul is attached. And Pratyagatma means the soul turns inwards. And the soul becomes detached. Pratyag. Pratyahar as we have. So similarly Pratyag. And then to become Pratyagatma is the ultimate goal. And Prabhupada says that there are these five kinds of vayus, which he mentions briefly. He's using this to explain prana karmani chapare. So there is prana vayu, apana vayu, vyana, saman, udan. So what is this? What the prana vayu is basically our respiration. The apana vayu goes upwards. Vyana vayu acts to shrink and expand. Samana vayu is at just equilibrium. Udana vayu goes upwards. So now, it's interesting. Now, pranavayu is one of the vayus, and also, prana is also the generic word used to describe all the five vayus. So just like the mind is referred to as one of the subtle elements in the subtle body, along with intelligence and false ego. But sometimes, the mind may be generically used to refer to the subtle body. So we have the matter, mind, and consciousness. So now mind is generically used to refer to the subtle body of which mind is one component. So like that, pranavayu can be generically used to refer to all the pranavayus, or it can be used to refer to one of the five kinds of vayus, or others have other names, but all of them together are also called as pranavayu. So they have their specific functions. So for example, samanavayu, if we see, and sometimes when a person starts turning round and round and round, we feel vertigo. So why do we feel vertigo? We start feeling chakka. Why? That's because the vayu is getting disinclined, is getting disrupted, disoriented. So the whole system of analyzing the body in terms of vayu, it's a sophisticated system of analysis. Basically, when you want to look at the body, there are different ways of looking at it. So modern medicine offers us one way of looking at the body. The Vedic culture offers us different ways of another way of looking at the body. It involves prana, it involves shakti. The Ayurveda offers us another, somewhat related, slightly different way of looking at the body, which is based on kapha, vata, pitta. So these are, of course, Ayurveda and pranayams, perspectives, the shaktis and everything, they are related. We'll discuss about these more in the 8th chapter again. But the important point is that all these vayus can be directed inwards. The whole process of pranayam, nowadays it is practiced that, okay, you do this anulom vilom, your respiratory diseases will go away. You do this exercise, you do this particular kind of breathing, this disease will go away. Now these may be happening, and these may be beneficial also, but the point is that is not the primary goal of doing all these activities. All these activities, the regulation of life affairs is ultimately meant to turn our consciousness inwards. Now Krishna will describe further. He now he'll describe different kinds of yajnas in one verse over here. Dravyajnas tapo yajna yoga yajnas tathapare swadhyaya jnana yajnascha yataya samshita vrataha. So dravya yajna, dravya is possessions, wealth. So some people sacrifice their wealth. Tapo yajna, some people sacrifice in austerities. They do the sacrifice of austerities. Yoga yajna, some people do practice ashtanga yoga. Tatha apare, apare means some others. And swadhyaya jnana yajnascha, some people do the swadhyaya yajna, they seriously study. So what are they doing? They are sacrificing their intelligence. So in this way, yatayaha, the enlightened person, yatayaha can mean yati, yati is renunciate. Yatayaha is those who are endeavoring seriously, they are enlightened. They are sacrificing. They are in that sense renounced. Samshita vrataha. Samshita means strict. So they take strict vows and they act accordingly. Now when they act in this way, what are they actually doing? They are trying to connect with the absolute truth by sacrificing what is available to them, what is accessible to them for a higher purpose. So now Prabhupada gives examples of these. And then he says that dravya yajna, sacrificing positions, people giving charity. So dharmashala, annakshetra, atitishala, anathalay, vidyapit. So all these charitable activities are called dravyamaya yajna, Prabhupada says. So now if you will see, Prabhupada doesn't talk about this in any negative way. He doesn't say, oh, this is all mundane, you should not do it, we should only chant Hare Krishna. So Krishna is telling this is one way in which one can sacrifice. So people who are doing charitable activities, they are to be commended for the principle of sacrifice that they have. That's why they are doing those activities. Now somebody may say, oh, but they are doing it for name and fame. That is okay. But at least they are seeking name and fame, not just by going to parties and trying to get a big name by saying how many members of the opposite sex I have conquered. Even if they are looking for name and fame, they are looking for it in a way that is beneficial to others. They are not going to a party and thinking, having a competition, you know, how many bottles of liquor you drank, I'll drink more bottles of liquor than you. People can seek name and fame in different ways also. So sometimes somebody seeks name and fame in a more elevated way, in the sense that the person is also thinking of the benefit of others. And that indicates the consciousness situated in a higher mood. Then dravya yajnas tapo yajnas. And tapo yajna Prabhupada talks about chaturmasya. So chaturmasya, it can become quite an intricate ritual. In Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada did not go into the technicalities, just all general principles. On this month avoid this, this month avoid this, this month avoid this. And Prabhupada himself is not going into too many technical details of sometimes chaturmasya, people just take one morsel of food per day, or one eating per day. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing that for a long time when he was doing austerities. He tapasya because he felt he wanted to become purer so that he could preach vigorously. Then there is Chandrayana. Chandrayana is also another kind of sacrifice involving certain rituals which actually lead to purification. And now Prabhupada gives the here, for example, he says under Chaturmasya Vav, the candidate does not shave for 4 months during the year, does not eat certain food, does not eat twice in a day, or does not leave home. Is that Tapomaya Yajna? So does not shave for 4 months during the year. So some people ask, you know, we see this in our Acharya's photos, we see Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Some people ask, you know, why is Gaur Kishore Babaji sporting a beard? He's not sporting a beard, as if that's something fanciful object just to be shown off. Nowadays people have made hair into a Lavanyam Keshadharanam, it is said that. The hairstyle, hair is considered a sign of beauty. Hairstyle is considered to be one of the defining characteristics of a person. So that hairstyle for males, even the way they have their beard and mustache, that is also considered to be stylish. So actually, when we see the picture of Acharyas, if they have beard, that is not because they are sporting a beard or a mustache to show off. That is because those particular paintings, they are made based on how they are recollected by their followers and when they are performing austerities during Chaturmasya. During Chaturmasya, one just puts aside the body and tries to minimize the needs of the body and focuses more and more on the absolute truth. So this engagement, this focus on the absolute truth is very intense, and that's why they don't care for the body. So there are two ways to not care for the body, especially with respect to the hair. One is to completely neglect it, let it grow whichever way it grows, and the other is to shave it off. So normally Vaishnavas shave the hair, but in some cases some Vaishnavas may just let it grow grow without bothering about it. They don't shave. That's also one way. It's austerity, because one is not trying to make it look very attractive in any way. Just don't focus on it. That's also one way of doing it. Generally, devotees, they shave their head. And then Prabhupada talks about Yoga Yajna. Yoga Yajna Sathapare Swadhyaya Jnana Yajnascha. Those involve study. So all these yogis are faithfully engaged in different types of sacrifice and are seeking a higher status of life. They are all seeking a higher status of life. So all these sacrifices are ultimately meant for elevation. That Krishna will talk about in one of the later verses. Prabhupada gives it to us right here itself. So now Krishna talks about the next kind of yajna. Here he is talking about controlling the breath. So this is basically related with yoga. Process of Ashtanga Yoga. Apane juhati pranam prane panam tathapare pranapanagati rudva pranayam parayanaha apareniyatahara pranan praneshu juhati. So based on the continuity of thoughts, Srila Prabhupada cuts the words. So 4.30 is brought up here in 4.29, and we'll see one of the later verses, 4.31. It has only two lines instead of four lines. So here we have A, B, C, D, E and F. This is talking about the advanced stage of pranayama in the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So apane juhati pranam. So apana is the air that goes downwards. Prana is the air that goes outwards. So apane juhati pranam. So the idea is that one offers the outward air in the inward and the inward air in the outward. Prane apanam tatha pare, and then prana apana gati rudva, and in this way one gati rudva, one checks the movement of the air. So one tries to bring the movement of the air to a steady state of neutrality. Pranayama parayanaha. Such a person is dedicated to pranayama. So this is one kind of yoga, and there are others. You say apare niyataharaha. They are very niyatahara. They actually regulate their eating a lot, and pranan praneshu juhuvati, and they offer their prana in the air. They offer the outgoing air into itself. So you wonder, what is all this talking about? Offer the outgoing air and the downward air. What is it referred to? Prabhupada explained that briefly. So Prabhupada says the apana air goes downward and the prana goes up. Up means it comes up and then it goes out from the body. So, now there are different stages in this. So, Prabhupada says the pranayama yogi practices breathing the opposite way until the currents are neutralized into puraka equilibrium. So, there's a particular way in which the body breathes. When we try to go in the opposite way, that involves increasing one's willpower and regulating oneself. So, offering the exhaled breath into the inhaled breath is called rechaka. And when both airs are completely stopped, one is said to be in a kumbhaka yoga. So, these are all technicalities which are not the part of yuga dharma for Kali Yuga. So, we will not go into them. But the point is that this is one of the rituals which was used, which was one of the spiritual processes that was used for gradual spiritual advancement. So, Krishna mentions this, but what the important point he's saying is that this is ultimately meant for attaining Brahman. And in all these purports, we'll see Srila Prabhupada maintains the consistent theme that we should practice Krishna consciousness. That, yes, these are all valid rituals. They are a part of the valid rituals or processes. And they are a part of the broad Vedic culture. But the important point is that in this Kali Yuga, we practice Krishna consciousness. This is the ultimate recommendation of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So, when we look at all these different processes that Krishna gives, now we can understand one part of the rationale that Krishna, of the rationale of the statement that Krishna gives at the end of the Gita. In 18.66, he says, Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. So, why is he saying Sarvadharman parityajya? Give up all varieties of religion? These are all the varieties of religion that are present in the Vedic culture. So, Krishna is saying, give them up, just mamekam sharanam braja. So, what Krishna gives at the end of the Gita, Prabhupada gives us throughout the Gita. So, Prabhupada is not cancelling what Krishna is giving. Prabhupada is giving the conclusion throughout. So that we don't misunderstand. So that we don't lose out. So, Prabhupada writes that reducing the eating process is very helpful in the matter of sense control. And without sense control, there is no possibility of getting out of the material entanglement. Reducing the eating process, Prabhupada says, is very helpful. So, actually, now this doesn't mean that we have to intentionally starve ourselves. The idea is not that we eat so less that we don't have any energy to do service to Krishna, not to do our responsibilities and to use the opportunities that Krishna sends our way. The important point is that we don't make eating a primary activity or a primary fantasy. Primary activity is constantly chewing something, munching something. Fantasy is constantly thinking, when is the next prasad? When is the next food coming? Like that, we don't do that. Eating is one part of life, and we don't eat a giant item, giant quantity. So here Krishna says, Krishna will talk about this once again later, Laghvashi in the 18th chapter. In the 6th chapter, he talks about regulation in terms of taking Yuktahara Viharasya. So we regulate the eating, and Prabhupada says, just by taking prasadam is regulated. And within prasadam also, if we keep the quantity and the quality regulated, then that goes a long way in keeping us sense controlled. And so sense control is important for liberation. It's the foundation for liberation. Now Krishna will describe in the next verse the broad principles of yajna. So now he has given different kinds of yajna. Now he tells what is the principle underlying it? What is the purpose of it? What is the essence of it? That's what he talks about in the next set of verses. From here till 33. Sarve pyete yajna vidho yajna kshapita kalmashaha Yajna-shishtamrita-bhujo yanti brahma-sanatanam sarve-pyete. All these people, yajna-vidho. Yajna-vidho means they are all knowers of yajna. And what happens? Yajna-kshapita-kalmashaha. They become, kalmashaha is impurities. Yajna-kshapita is they become purified. They become purified of all the impurities. Yajna-kshapita-kalmashaha. Then yajna-shishta. Shishta, it refers to the remnants. Yajna Shishta Shri Santo, that is a part of the famous 3.13 verse. Shishta means what remains. Yajna Shishta Amrita Bhujo. So Amrita Bhujo means they taste as nectar. Amrit can mean eternity. Amrit can mean nectar. So what is the remnant of yajna is Amrit. And what happens when they taste that Amrit? Bhujo means to taste, to relish. Then Yanti Brahma Sanatanam. Yanti, they go here. Brahma Sanatanam, to the eternal Brahma and atmosphere, the eternal supreme. So what Krishna is telling here, what happens when one practices yajna? First he says is, if one does it yajna vidho, those who know the purpose of yajna, when they act in this way, sarvepeti yajnavyo yajna shapita kalmasha, by the practice of yajna the kalmasha go away. So first result of yajna is purification, and ultimately yajna shishta amrita bhuju, they enjoy the fruits of the result and attain liberation. Yanti brahma sanatanam, they attain the sanatan brahma, the eternal spiritual platform. So in this way, essentially what Krishna is talking about is that we all become purified and liberated. These are the two ultimate purposes of yajna, purification and liberation. Now of course, not all yajnas lead to purification and liberation to the same degree and the same speed. That will vary naturally, because there are different level of commitment, different level of sacrifice in different kinds of yajnas. But Krishna is giving us a unifying vision of everything. There is a diversity of forms. If you think of, at one level, the householders living householder life, and then we think about prana, some yogis, they are regulating their breath, and there are others who are absorbed in study. The external cultural forms may seem to be quite different for all these people, but the unifying principle and purpose, what is that? Purification and liberation. Shapita bhujo, yajna shapita kalmashaha, one becomes purified of the impurities, and yanti brahma sanatana. So in this way Krishna explains how there is a common principle for all these. And then the liberation can of course be personal or impersonal, Srila Prabhupada mentions. Now Srila Prabhupada uses a verse fragment over here because in 29 he has given a longer verse. So nayam lokosti yajnasya kuto anya kuru sattama. This is a very short but very potent verse. What does it say? Na ayam loko, not in this world, asti, ayagnyasya, that ayagnyasya is without the performance of yajna. Without the performance of yajna, even in this loka, one cannot be happy. Kuto anyaha kurusattama. Kurusattama is the best of the kurus. The reference to Arjuna to indicate that you are not this kind of person who does not do yajna. You are a person who is the best among kurus, so definitely you will perform yajna. But those who do not do, kuto anyaha, what to speak of the next world? So even in this world, people will not be happy. See, when we understand yajna to be sacrifice, actually if people don't do sacrifice, then there is no happiness even in this world. Generally, people who just go out to do enjoyment, say, I'll go to a party, I'll go to a movie, I'll go to the beach, I'll go to a picnic, I'll go here, I'll go there. When people go out to do activity just for the sake of enjoyment, when they are pleasure-driven, when they are pleasure-centered, where they are not thinking about others, they are simply thinking of themselves. Me and me alone. So me first and me only. So all of us in one sense are I specialists. I specialists. You know, I. I first or I only. So when people are like this, then they don't get any deep satisfaction. They may get some titillation. Yes, I went to this place, I saw that, I saw that. But actually we sacrifice for something higher than ourselves. Then even in this world, we get a very deep fulfillment. Some people may sacrifice for the nation. So, as we will lay down our life for the sake of the nation. And at one level, from the spiritual perspective, we could say, oh, this is illusion. Why is the person thinking that I am the body? And I am that which the country which is connected with my body is my country. And I love it so much. So we could say it's illusion at one level. Yes, but as compared to within the realm of material reality, sacrificing for one's country is nobler than just trying to live at the sensual level, trying to seek one's own pleasure. So that way, the concern for society, concern for nation, the high sacrifice, this is a sacrificing principle. And when one lives in this way, one becomes purified. Purified in the sense that one at least gives up gross sensory desires by that. And there is fulfillment that comes by that. By living for a cause higher than oneself, one gets fulfillment. When one lives for oneself, for one's own pleasure, then the fulfillment dries out, satisfaction dries out even in this life. One lives very superficially. Basically, people who think that they're enjoying, yes, we're going to parties, we're going to movies, we're doing this, we're doing that. What are they doing? All their hearts are internally actually already bare, empty. And I wrote a poem about this once. Their hearts are filled with fears. Their minds are pierced by desires. They are on the verge of tears. and they say cheers. So it's all just a show. Their hearts are filled with fears. Hey, what if that goes wrong? What if that? What are people thinking about me? Do people think I'm attractive? People think that I'm attractive. Their hearts are filled with fears. Their minds are pierced by desires. Yeah, I want that. I want that. I want that. That person got a better dress than mine. That person has got a better car than mine. That person has a more good-looking, more wealthy spouse than mine. I want that, 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 that. So, minds are pierced by desires. And because of this, fears and desires, they're on the verge of tears. All the way on the verge of tears, and they say cheers. So, actually, it's a show. It's not happiness. People may have smiling faces, but actually they have crying hearts. They have a smiling face. They put on a big smile in front of others. Why they put on a smile like that? Because they have to show to the world, I am successful. If I have a glum face, people say, oh, you are a failure. You are good for nothing. Nobody wants to think that I am a failure. No, certainly nobody wants to want the world to know that I am a failure. Therefore, they put on a glum face. So smiling faces they may have, but actually their hearts are crying. Crying out of loneliness, crying out of emptiness, crying because of purposelessness, and ultimately crying because of lovelessness. They don't know what to love ultimately. They talk about love, but love has no meaning really without sacrifice. And the highest level of sacrifice is love for Krishna. So Krishna says, even in this world one cannot be happy without sacrifice. What to speak of the second? Next. So this is, we are just talking at a material level over here. This principle applies at a religious and at a spiritual level also. That the more one sacrifices and higher the cause for which one sacrifices, the greater is the happiness that one experiences, the greater the fulfillment that one experiences. So sacrifice, actually, what does it mean? It means to give up something little for something great. What does sacrifice mean? It means to give up something little for something great. So what is a great? It is an eternal relationship with Krishna. And therein is unending fulfillment, that ever increasing fulfillment that is there. And for that, we give something little. What is the something little we give up? We give up the flickering pleasures of this world. So that is sacrifice. And Krishna says that at some level everybody has to practice sacrifice. Otherwise, even in this world a person cannot be happy. What to speak of the next world? Then, so now Krishna explains further how this whole yajna takes place. So where does the yajna originate from and where is it meant to take us? Evam bahuvidha yajna Vidita Brahmano Mukhe Karmajan Viditan Sarvan Evam Gyatva Vimokshase. So Evam Bahuvidha Yajna. So these different kinds of yajnas, Bahuvidha. Bahuvidha is they are of different forms. We discussed the forms are different. Where are they coming? Vitata. They have emanated from, they are spread out from Brahmano Mukhe. They have come from the Vedas. So, Mukhe means from the Vedas have prescribed, outlined them, and they are actually, ultimately, all these yajnas involve some kind of work. The whole correlation of this is, Arjuna, you should work. So, they all involve some kind of activity. Inactivity is no solution. Karmajan Viditan Sarvan. Karmajan means, they are born of karma. Viditan Sarvan. All these, know them to be. Know them to be born of work. And actually when one understands this unifying purpose, this underlying principle of yajna, then what happens? Evam yatva vimokshase. When one understands this, then one will become liberated. So, the forms of these sacrifices are different. Bahuvidha yajna. But they have all come from the Vedas. And their ultimate purpose is one. Their ultimate purpose is to liberate us from material existence. Shanti Brahma Sanatanam. And how is that going to happen? Through the Yajnashishta, Yajnakshapita Kalmasha, to purification. And that purification requires some kind of activity. Even a person who is doing pranayam is doing some activity. Person may be arousing the activities of the senses, but is doing some activity at the level of breath. Even a person who is an intellectual or is a Gyan Yogi, speculating, naiti, naiti. That person is also doing some work at the level of the head, at the level of the intellect. So, karmajan vidditan sarvan. So, they are all involving work. And by involving work, they gradually lead to liberation. So, all of them are ultimately meant for this purpose of liberation. Now, Krishna will tell here, what kind of yajna? So these are very different kinds of yajna, but which kind of yajna is better? So shriyan dravyamayat yajnani jnana yajna parantapa sarvam karma akhilam partha jnane parisamapyate. So shriyan, better than dravyamayat yajnaj. So better than the sacrifice of one's wealth, sacrifice of one's possessions, jnana yajna parantapa. It is better, actually, the sacrifice of knowledge. Then, sarvam karma khilam partha, that all karma, so there are two describers over, sarvam and akhilam. So all activities, their ultimate goal is what? Parisamapyate. Parisamapyate is end, they culminate. They attain their highest perfection. In what? Jnana. What is this jnana? This is the knowledge of our true identity and of our eternal activity. So, sarvam karma akhilam partha jnane parisamapyate. So, Krishna is telling that if we compare, some people may sacrifice their possessions and some people may actually engage their intellectual faculty. So, among these two, who are better? Actually, the people who engage their intellectual faculty are better, because ultimately it is the intellectual faculty that is to be educated. It is the intellectual faculty which is going to be used to redirect our heart from matter towards Krishna, from the world to the reality beyond the world. So this jnana is not just impersonal jnana. The Bhagavad Gita uses the word jnana in a generic sense to describe many things. So it just refers to spiritual knowledge. The spiritual knowledge ultimately will culminate in knowledge of Krishna. As we'll see in the later chapters, Vedaishya Sarvai Ahameva Vedya, 15.15. And Krishna says, one who knows me as supreme, such a person knows everything. In 15.19, Yoma Ameva Sammudho Janati Purushottama Sa Sarvavid Bhajati Maam Sarva Bhavena Bharata. Such a person knows everything. Who is that person? That person is the person who knows Krishna. So, that person is Sarvavid, one who knows everything. So, Jnana ultimately refers to knowledge about Krishna. The point Krishna is telling over here is that if there are two people doing sacrifices, one is just sacrificing possessions. So, for example, somebody decides, I don't want a kingdom, I'll renounce the kingdom and I'll go to the forest. So, Arjuna is thinking that, I'll renounce the kingdom. Okay, that is one way of doing it. But better than that is to understand and act in knowledge. So, Shreyan Dravyamayadhya Gyaj, better than Dravyamayagya is Jnana Yajna Parantapa. Jnana Yajna is better. Why Jnana Yajna is better? Because Jnana Yajna will lead to the development of the intellect. And ultimately one will acquire proper spiritual knowledge. So, many people may give charity and that is good. But if they are not advancing in spiritual knowledge, then the charity will at best be in Sattvaguna and it will keep them bound in mortal existence in Sattvaguna. But when they understand that I am not the body, I am the soul, and soul has an eternal relationship with Krishna, then their charity will lead to purification. And ultimately, then charity will become a part of a process that will lead to purification and ultimately liberation. So here, Krishna is recommending to Arjuna that cultivate jnana. Now, is he telling that Arjuna, you should actually go out? How should one cultivate jnana? Is he saying that, okay, you should go to the forest and study scripture and then you can cultivate jnana? Or that you go to the forest and do speculation then cultivate jnana? How one should cultivate jnana? What is that jnana and what is the glory of that jnana? That Krishna will talk about in the next verse. So, in this section, Krishna has talked about various principles of yajna. In this section, so we started from 4.24. So, 4.24 was Brahma Arpanam Brahmavir. That was talking about the general principle of how, because everything is latently spiritual, being the Lord's energy, everything can be spiritualized. So the principle of yajna is to spiritualize our activity. That's Krishna had recommended 4.23, yajnaya acharataha. And then from 25 to 29, Krishna describes various forms of yajna, which can be performed by different people. And basically, he says this is the way different people do yajna and they all strive for purification. And then from 30 to 33, he describes principles. He says the purpose of yajna is purification, liberation. Without yajna, one cannot be happy. He says that, all these yajnas are, they're varied in form, but they have a common origin, that is, they come from the Vedas. And one who understands this, so it's a person who will understand liberation, latent liberation. They are all rooted in karma, they are all born of karma. And one who understands this, that person will choose the right kind of activity, and by engaging the right kind of activity, that person will eventually attain liberation. And then liberation involves getting proper knowledge. So therefore he says, if somebody just does yajna ignorantly, sacrifices the position, and somebody else does yajna with knowledge, then the yajna in knowledge is better. Because that yajna in knowledge will lead to the development of further knowledge. So when I act in knowledge, my knowledge deepens. It becomes more internalized and realized. And that way, I become more advanced in that understanding of the knowledge. Therefore, Krishna says, actually, jnane parisamapyate. That ultimately, all yajnas should lead to knowledge. So we'll discuss about how Krishna recommends to Arjuna, how he should acquire that knowledge in the next verse. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.